Jeffrey's website, by the way, one of them, responsibletechnology.org. They're all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we'll be back with more as we talk about genetically modified foods on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, you were talking about some kind of research or study before the break.
Yes. We had talked at the top of the hour about hamsters losing the ability to get pregnant or have children after three generations of being fed genetically modified soy. And there was also 20 or 25% death rate among the newborns compared to only a 5% in the control. Now, that immediately harkens back to another study in Russia also with rats. They were fed, the mother rats were fed genetically modified soy starting 2 weeks before they conceived. And more than half of the babies died within 3 weeks. There was that compared to only a 10% death rate. So again, about a five-fold increase in infant mortality. The offspring also were smaller on average. And when they tried to reproduce, the group that was trying to reproduce among the GM-fed group was not able to. Now, it's interesting that this is not isolated either. We have other incidences. We have the Austrian study where they fed corn to mice, and the mice had smaller litters and smaller babies. We had the buffalo that had reproductive problems, including infertility, when they were eating genetically modified cottonseed. We have male rats that were fed genetically modified soybeans, and the testicles actually changed color from pink to blue. We have mice that were fed genetically modified soy, and their testicles changed, including damage to the young sperm cells and changes in the way the DNA functioned among the offspring when parents were fed, at least the embryo offspring, when the parents were fed genetically modified soy. So we're seeing a pattern here of reproductive problems. Now, what was the response by the scientific community when this astounding result in the Russian National Academy of Sciences in 2005, about over 50% death rate, instead of repeating the study, they attacked and vilified Dr. Irina Ermakova, the Russian scientist, and she had documents burnt on her desk, samples that were stolen. Her boss, from pressure from his boss, told her she couldn't do any more GMO research. What's an interesting thing happened, however, is that when she had conducted three studies in a row with similar results and this very high death rate, coincidentally, the rat chow that was being fed to all the rats in her facility switched so that it was based now on genetically modified soy. So she couldn't do any more studies. So what did she do? After 2 months, she asked her colleagues, what's the mortality rate in your studies? Completely unrelated to GMOs, but now all of the rats in the facility were eating genetically modified soy. The mortality rate had jumped to over 55%.
That's huge.
So one of the colleagues tried to comfort Dr. Ermakova when she couldn't do any more research by having the audacity to say, well, maybe the GM soy will solve the overpopulation problem. Now, if you look at this...
Like genocide.
Yes, I mean it's crazy. If you look, and we're also finding that the overuse of the Roundup may be causing reproductive problems as well. I'm just reading that and talking to scientists now to explore that. So when we look at the statistics of health in the United States, we see a high incidence of low birth weight babies starting in the mid 90s when GM soy was introduced. We see a high infant mortality, not just from soy, but not just from GM introduction, but also it's been high for several years since it was introduced. We see all sorts of infertility on the rise as well, and no one is looking to see if it's the genetically modified soy or corn that has been shown in these studies to have a big problem.
Why aren't they looking at that, Jeff?
Well, this is the problem is, if you show any incidence of disease higher with GMOs compared to non-GM, you blow the myth that GMOs are the same. And this myth was created by the FDA, actually by the biotech industry through their enforcement wing, the FDA. You see, in 1991, the first Bush administration told the FDA to promote the biotechnology industry. They were mistaken to believe that it would increase U.S. exports and shore up a U.S. trade deficit. Well, the opposite happened, and we spent $3 to $5 billion in extra money each year, propping up the GM crops no one wants, and our exports reduced, but that's another story. So the FDA responded to this order by the White House by creating a new position for Michael Taylor, specifically for Michael Taylor. Now, why Michael Taylor? Taylor was Monsanto's former attorney. He was also the attorney for a biotech information council, a group of biotech companies, and for his clients, he had designed a regulatory framework that they could lobby for, which would allow GMOs to be fast-tracked. So the position that they created for him was the deputy commissioner of policy, the number two man at the agency, and the person overlooking the policy when GMO policy was created. Now, when the policy came out, there was a sentence that claimed basically that GMOs were no different, and on that basis, no testing was necessary, no labeling was necessary. The FDA would not even have to approve GMOs or even know if a GMO was being introduced to the market. Now, this was all based on this false concept that they knew of no information showing that GMOs were significantly different. We didn't know it was a false concept until a colleague of mine, Steve Drucker, sued the FDA. 44,000 formerly secret FDA documents were made public, and what it revealed was that the overwhelming consensus among the FDA's own scientists, starting in 1991 when they were looking at GMOs, was that it was dangerous. Not only different, but dangerous. That it could create allergies and toxins and new diseases and nutritional problems. They spelled it out. Different divisions had their own descriptions. One said new toxins, higher levels of existing toxins, accumulations of toxins from the environment, bioaccumulation of problems in the milk and meat of animals, higher levels of allergens, new diseases that would resist antibiotics, all sorts of things. And they urged their superiors to require long-term studies. Not only were they ignored, but their warnings were denied under the false pretense that the agency was not aware of any information of this sort. Now, Michael Taylor, after basically allowing GMOs onto the market with a complete hands-off policy, later worked at the USDA on biotech issues, then became Monsanto's vice president, a reward for a job well done, and has now been assigned by the Obama administration as the U.S. food safety czar. So the person, I believe, who's responsible for more food-related illnesses and deaths than anyone in human history, by fast-tracking GMOs, he may be responsible for that, is now in charge of the food supply safety in the U.S.
That's amazing. And, last hour, I'll be talking with Dr. Betty Martini about aspartame.
Oh, yeah.
Same kind of thing, Jeffrey.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same kind of thing with Donald Rumsfeld's interference and all that. And aspartame, by the way, is a genetically engineered sweetener. They genetically engineer the microorganism to make it. So it's part of my look at that also. Now, one thing that I covered in my book, Seeds of Deception, over and over again, and it's on my website at responsibletechnology.org, and this is interesting, that of all the things that we talk about, all the research, the thousands of sick, sterile, and dead livestock, the toxic and allergic reactions, an epidemic which I haven't even talked about that was discovered and related to a GM food supplement, of all the things that I present, there's a significant percentage of people that find the following information the most compelling, and that is, it started actually with a farmer, Howard Vligor, who decided to do a test with his cows. He put half of his trough with GM corn and the other half with non-GM corn.
He was doing this on his own.
On his own. He let the cows into the pen, and they all huddled around the non-GM corn. They wouldn't go near the GM corn. So he told this to some other fellas, and they started reproducing this with cows and pigs. And he told it to a group of farmers, and someone said, well, I got a story. I put an ear of GM corn, nailed it to one tree, and non-GM corn to another tree, and the squirrels would only eat the non-GM corn, and this was in the winter in
That's
Iowa.
That's amazing.
So after they ate the non-GM corn after a while, I would just replace it. I decided to do an experiment. I didn't replace the non-GM corn, and I just watched.
Let them starve. See what would happen, right?
For the coldest days in Iowa, and I'm from Iowa, and those 10 days were really cold, the coldest days in Iowa, the squirrels would not touch the GM corn. Finally, they nibbled like a few kernels, and the farmer, had pity on them and put out a non-GM, and they ate it immediately. Then someone else in Illinois decided, and I just spoke to them about this.
What a story.
they decided to do the squirrel thing, and the guy bought a bag of GM and non-GM ears and put it in a garage ready to do the study and forgot about it. But when he went and discovered these and realized that the mice had done the study for them, they had broken into the bag of non-GM corn and eaten all the kernels and never touched the GM corn.
That's amazing.
And then there's another guy that saw geese who would just hang out on the side of a soybean field, munching away on the non-genetically modified soy, but not touching the genetically modified soy.
What is the mechanism in these animals that allow them to back off on the GM foods?
I don't know. And it's even like when they were trying to get the Flavor Saver tomato there, they did a rat feeding study. The CEO of Calgene said, you can be Chef Boyardee, but these rats are not going to eat these genetically modified tomatoes. There was a woman in South Africa, her chickens would not eat genetically modified corn. There's the buffalo in India that wouldn't eat the cottonseed oil. There's when you let cows into the stubble of a GM cornfield, they'll just walk until they find the non-GM field and eat there if it's available. They have some, and the thing is, when they force fed the rats these tomatoes, for example, 7 of 20 developed stomach lesions, another 7 of 40 died within 2 weeks.
Jeez.
You know, when the buffalo in India did eat the cottonseed cakes, then most of them had reproductive problems, many of them died. So they know something, and we don't know if it's smell, we don't know if it's some subtle sense in terms of the field effects, but we don't have that, which is why, of course, we create the nongmoshoppingguide.com so that people can get this, so we can raise humans up to the level of animals.
Now, let's go back, talk a little bit more about the FDA, what they're not doing to protect us, what we can do about labeling. And by the end of tonight with you on the show, Jeffrey, I want you to give us tips on what we can do at home or when we go shopping just to be smart.
And more than that, George, I'm going to describe for you a campaign that can end the genetic engineering of the food supply and a whole campaign that we're launching. October is non-GMO month. 10-10-10 is non-GMO day. We have a momentum building up to that. And then we have a tipping point strategy between 10-10-10 and 11-11-11. And we're going to invite all of your listeners to participate. And so I would suggest that everyone go to responsibletechnology.org and sign up for the free newsletter, because we'll keep you informed of the activities going on all over the country and all over North America regarding non-GMO months. And also, before we get off, I'm going to talk to your listeners about an action they can take to protect our rights.
You're not getting off for a while. You're going to be on.
I know. Right. I know. But the thing is, there's something going on in Ohio, and it's going to affect everyone if we don't move. But anyway, what was the question?
Well, let's talk about the FDA for a second.
All right, good.
I mean, why aren't they protecting us? And it's not just with the GM foods. It's with everything.
Well, you know, I talked to a scientist who used to work.
And let me just point this out.
All right.
They are very smart to jump on stories of product recalls. E. coli is out in the system. Where's the lettuce? That becomes a major story. We cover those. And it makes them look like they're on top of things. We're going to find the farm. We're going to find the distributor. And off they go. Yet the big picture, they don't seem to touch. Why not?
Well, at the FDA, and I've spoken to people who used to work at the FDA, one guy, for example, who was fired because he was holding up the approval process of Monsanto's genetically modified bovine growth hormone by having the audacity of ordering more tests. They fired him and canceled the test.
Which they sold that division.
Yeah, they sold it to Elanco, which is Eli Lilly's veterinary division, because they saw that the tipping point of consumer rejection was underway. Was kicked out of the milk from Walmart and Starbucks and Yoplait and Danone and Kroger's and Publix and most of the top dairies. So they just got rid of it and gave it to Eli Lilly, and they're now Eli Lilly's now chopping it around and trying to promote what I would consider falsified.
It's a little like Fox buying MySpace. It is. They don't know what to do with it anymore.
Exactly. So in terms of the FDA, when you talk to people at the FDA, they refer to their clients as the companies that they're regulating. And this is both in the United States and in Canada. I was talking to a whistleblower in Health Canada, which is as bad as the FDA, apparently, and he said, no, the client is the public. And they said, no, the client is the pharmaceutical company. And he realized that they have basically free reign. A huge percentage of people who have high positions in the FDA when they leave the FDA, they take up very well-paid positions in the pharmaceutical companies that they were helping get their products approved.
Yes.
And so there's that revolving
door. Or the food companies, whatever, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, at the FDA, when they were looking at bovine growth hormone for Monsanto, Monsanto's former researcher moved from Monsanto's company into the FDA and was in charge of the division that reviewed her research.
Well, here's a case in point. When we talk about aspartame later with Betty Martini, Arthur Hull Hayes Jr., who was the FDA commissioner under Reagan,
right,
who had to resign under a cloud of suspicion, after he was the deciding vote to make aspartame legal, when he ended up leaving under this allegations of impropriety, he served as a public relations guy for Burst & Marsteller, a huge public relations company, which represented G.D. Searle, which made aspartame.
Oh, yeah, it gets worse. I mean, I'm sure Betty can talk about that, but the attorney that was suing G.D. Searle decided to give up his case and join the opposing law firm. Then his assistant took over, and then he let the statute of limitations run out, and then he joined the law firm for $400,000.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's absolutely – I talked to one whistleblower, I mean, one FDA observer, Jim Turner, who wrote Chemical Feast for the Nader Report on the FDA. He said, in the FDA, there's three types of people. There's some of the most intelligent scientists he's ever met.
Hard workers.
Then there's some of the most unintelligent scientists who can't get a job anywhere else. And then the third category is the political appointees who have a completely different agenda. When I read the memos, and I didn't read all 44,000, but I read the key memos that were made public from a lawsuit, the FDA scientists were very upset. One, Lewis Pribble, a microbiologist, said, he said, every time the policy was being given to upstairs, the political appointees, would come back with less and less science. And he said, what's become of this document? It's basically a pro-industry document, a political document that doesn't address consumers' concerns and side effects. And he predicted successfully, he was a brilliant predictor, he said, I don't think because of this that the food, that the Monsantos of the world will do the actual safety studies they would normally do, because they're not required, and that over time people have a false sense of security because it's been done hundreds of times, and so there's no problem. And that's exactly what we're seeing today. So we see an op-ed piece in the New York Times, a complete advertisement for Monsanto, claiming that there's not a problem with the safety. And we see even the New York Times editorial from this week claiming that the herbicide Roundup is benign. Complete mythology, but being picked up because of the incredible amount of pressure and lobbying and money. And another example of the effectiveness of that lobbying was a statement by Dan Glickman back in just at the end of the Clinton years when he was stepping down after being Secretary of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what I saw generically from the probiotic side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and feed the hungry and clothe the naked. And if you're against it, you're Luddites, you're stupid, and that, frankly, was the side our government was on. He said you felt like an alien or disloyal by trying to present an open-minded view. He said this attitude was written into his speeches, and when he actually decided to ad-lib and raise the issue that GMOs maybe should be labeled, he said he was slapped around by not only the biotech industry, but also by people in the Clinton administration, and feared that he would be fired. And it was only after he met with Hillary Clinton and she said she liked what he had said that he realized he wasn't going to be fired. So this is an example of how they force these politicians to walk in lockstep. They write it into their speeches. And so it's hard. It's like the current Obama administration has put all these probiotic people into top positions in the USDA and, of course, the FDA. And you don't have any idea what kind of information is actually getting to Obama because these guys have got disinformation down to a science. And they've got bad science down to a science.
And maybe they just don't think we're watching, but we are. We'll be back with more with Jeffrey Smith on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it sure is. Hey, for StreamLink members, Wednesday, that's today or tomorrow, depending on where you may be, Linda Moulton Howe is lined up for our StreamLink chat, so make sure you're part of that. The room fills up awfully fast. Lex has her all set up. Linda Moulton Howe on our chat, 8 p.m. Pacific time, 11 p.m. Eastern time. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Jeffrey Smith as we talk about genetically modified foods. And by the way, on that website, dongmoshoppingguide.com, he's got a free download there for you as well. So take advantage of that and go shopping and do the right thing. We'll talk with him more about that when we come right back. Jeffrey, so there are no labels on foods that say they are genetically modified, but are the organic or those with natural foods, are they putting on labels that say, hey, we've got, you know, we're organic or we're natural? Are they on labels? Are they put them on the food?
Yes, there's the organic products are not allowed to consciously use GMOs. And then there's also hundreds of products or some large number that have voluntarily put non-GMO on the label. Now, of course, there's the possibility of contamination. And anything that has an at-risk ingredient that does use corn or soy or cotton or canola, for example, has the capacity to have a contamination, irrespective of how good the farmer is and how much precaution he is or she has taken. So there is a new system out called the Non-GMO Project, and that actually is another seal, a very specific seal you'll be starting to see on products this year. There's thousands of products enrolled, and that actually requires testing so that if someone is going to say non-GMO, it's a specific third-party verified system with a uniform standard. So it's not just like anyone saying, well, we say it's non-GMO because of our own criteria. So that actually is a very important addition, and it's being picked up by the natural food industry. In fact, it's so important that Supermarket News in December said that the non-GMO project plus our website, nongmoshoppingguide.com, are the two reasons why 2010 will see an unprecedented upsurge of consumer awareness and concern about GMOs, and linked GMOs in the category of trans fats and too much sugar, salt, or carbs. And what it indicated was that we might see a revolution in consciousness about GMOs that will change the way the food companies produce their products. But unlike trans fats and sugar and salt and carbs, GMOs give no consumer benefit. So you won't see companies saying low GMO. You'll see companies, if they see a drop in market share of even a tiny percentage, they're going to eliminate GMOs. In fact, these major companies like Kraft have already eliminated GMOs for their European markets, for their Japanese markets.
Well, all right. I'm going to take you on a food shopping spree.
Great.
And I want you to point things out to us here as we walk through this shopping center here. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here we go. We're going inside. The doors, of course, open automatically.
Yep.
That makes it easier. We got a little basket here. And we're walking through the produce section, Jeffrey. Tell me what is genetically modified there, first of all, vegetables and fruits.
Good news on produce. You only have to think about four items, okay? We said them all, corn on the cob, papaya, but only papaya from Hawaii, zucchini, and yellow squash. Every other thing in the produce section will be non-GMO. There's no GM. Tomatoes, they were taken off the market. The potatoes were taken off the market. Now, there's experimental varieties that are in the laboratories, but they're not going to be in the produce section.
And if they are, you'll let us know.
That's absolutely. Get on, sign up for Spilling the Beans, our free electronic newsletter, and anything that comes out new, you will be informed immediately and know what to avoid.
Okay, so we're going to walk past the processed meats. We don't want those anymore.
Right. Now, the thing is, meat's got two things. Processed meat's got two things. It'll have the soy. It may have the corn derivatives. But the animals themselves are eating the genetically modified feed. Now, I was talking to some farmers, and this is completely new information that I haven't shared with anyone yet. There's farmers, when they butcher the animals and they remove the organs and whatnot, they're seeing clear differences in the animals that are fed GM and non-GMO.
That's amazing. In what ways?
Well, for example, it turns out that certain farmers like to use the intestines of pigs for casings, for sausages.
Yes, that's
but
true.
In the United States, a lot of people are going to New Zealand because for some reason the intestines just tear easily when they're being removed from a pig. And one of these guys who butchers the animals was shocked to find that when he was butchering pigs that ate non-GMO diets, the intestines were thick and intact, and he could pull them all out and use them for casings, whereas the pigs that were being fed genetically modified had very thin and terrible things. I also received a picture from farmers, and this is anecdotal evidence. We can't bank on this stuff.
Do you eat the casing, by the way? I always take it off. When, you know, in my day, whenever I'd go out and get some salami in St. Louis or something like that, or L.A., I would slice the top of that and kind of unwrap the casing.
Well, to me, I don't know. It's been a while since I ate that salami. I mean, I eat pretty much organic meats and things like that. So, but I also looked at pictures of intestines and organs from cows, and this guy described it. He said, when you look at the organs, when you cut open the animal that's been eating GMO compared to the non-GMO that he uses, he said the GMO fed animal smells horrible and has yellow all over it, and the intestines are purple.
Oh, my.
When he opens up the animals, like the cows that are fed on natural grain that's been properly raised, it's white, not yellow. The lard is white instead of yellow. The intestines are white. And I actually saw the pictures, purple versus white. And this is fascinating. Another person actually went to a slaughterhouse and looked at the stomach of pigs that were fed GM or non-GM, and he found there were more ulcerations in the stomachs of the pigs that were fed the GM grain.
All right.
Now,
so
if you think about the intestines being thin or terrible, and you think about the ulcerations in the stomach, then you think about what does the BT corn do? What it does is it breaks open the intestines or the stomach or the digestive system of insects and kills them. What if the BT toxin that's inside the corn is causing problems in the intestines and digestive tract?
Right.
And whenever I give a talk at doctors' conferences, and I do often, and I talk about the BT toxin and some of the other problems with gut bacteria, then the doctors say, you know, we've seen a lot of gastrointestinal problems in our practices since GMOs were introduced. And they say that especially in response to the only human feeding study ever published, which shows that the genes inserted into soybeans actually transfer into the bacteria of the intestine, of the bacteria living inside our intestines, and continue to function. Now, remember we said earlier that the soybeans are Roundup ready, designed for the soybean plant not to die when sprayed with Roundup. Well, it turns out that these human volunteers that had the gene transfer, their gut bacteria was Roundup ready.
Jeez.
So that means that the gene inside their inside the DNA was functioning and producing this Roundup ready protein. Now, fast forward. What if the BT gene from a corn chip transfers to your gut bacteria as well? It might theoretically turn it into a living pesticide factory.
It could.
So now, they never tested it because this is the pro-GM UK government that funded that study. And as soon as they found out, they never followed up to see if the BT gene transferred or the antibiotic-resistant marker genes used in GMOs transferred. And that could cause potentially super diseases untreatable with antibiotics. But that wasn't looked at. So what we're saying is the only human feeding study ever published confirmed the fear that scientists have had for years that genes might transfer into the bacteria living inside us. But no follow-up was done to see if there was medical implications that could be a disaster.
I wonder if the gastrointestinal doctors' businesses are going through the roof right now.
I tell you, they are. We've got Crohn's disease. We have irritable bowel. We have new type of stomach cancers and whatnot, or increased levels. And it's also happening with pets. So I've been getting this information, feedback, from doctors at these conferences. And so they're very, very concerned. In fact, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, which urged all doctors to prescribe non-GMO diets to everyone, specifically listed gastrointestinal disorders as linked to the animal feeding studies. In fact, the very process of genetic engineering, which is very violent, you know, you shoot genes into a gene gun into a plate of cells, and then you clone the cells into a plant, it causes hundreds or thousands of mutations in the DNA, hundreds or thousands of genes can change their levels of expression. Well, one scientist discovered that when he fed supposedly harmless genetically modified potatoes to rats, where the gene itself was producing a harmless insecticide, nonetheless, there was vast growth inside the intestines and intestinal walls and stomach walls, like double the size in the stomach walls. And it was not the specific gene that was inserted into the potato. It was somehow the massive damage to the plant that caused this problem. And he pointed out to me, he said, this is the same process that we use to create the potato as we use to create the soy on the market and the corn on the market and all those things. And so we may be seeing disruptions, not just because of the BT toxin or whatever, but just because of all the unpredicted side effects that are prone in this technology that might be creating potentially precancerous cell growth, like he looked at,
okay.
Or possibly leaky gut. Now, leaky gut is little holes in the digestive tract. And I've been to a lot of scientific lectures and medical conferences that link that to autoimmune disease, autism, and allergies. And that's what's on the rise. And if we feed, like, BT corn to children where they don't have a very well-intact digestive system and whatnot, and if it does create little holes in the digestive tract, it might be related to some of the rise of these problems. Now, this is all speculation, but there's a lot of lines of converging evidence. I'm not going to say we have a smoke.
Oh, they just, there was just a story about, acquired about ADHD.
Yeah, with the organophosphate.
Exactly, and pesticides.
Yeah, they find that they look at the physiologies of children, and those with higher levels of these pesticides have higher levels of ADHD. And the thing is, we've seen, DDT related to premature births. We're seeing another lindane associated with certain type of thyroid disease. It turns out the poisons that we're putting on our soil and on our food are affecting us. And these poisons came from the nerve gas industry in World War II. They're designed to be toxic, and they're unneeded. Well, now we're creating plants that require them, but they're unneeded if you grow properly. And we're seeing this. We're seeing the symptoms now in our very desperate youth that have all sorts of problems.
All right, let's keep walking through the supermarket here. So, as far as the corn, you're saying don't buy the corn on the cob or anything. Or how do you know? Will it say organic?
Well, organic corn will be. They don't plant GM corn seeds. There still could be pollinate.
I don't think I don't think other than going to these natural stores. If you go into a general supermarket, Jeffrey, I don't think I've ever seen a sign that says this corn is organic.
Well, I don't eat regular corn on the cob for sure, unless it says organic or non-GMO. And
right.
I buy from a local corn, stall or a car that's parked in the.
Well, how do you know though? How do you know it's not the BT seeds he was using?
Well, I ask him which seeds. He'll know which seeds, and if I trust them, and I won't.
Well, that's the thing. You got to trust the guy.
Yeah. It's interesting. There was a rigged research that was published where someone claimed that when people had a choice going to a farm store, they bought more GM corn than non-GM corn. But what happened was he didn't say in the published study that he put a big sign over the non-GM corn and said, "Would you eat wormy non-GM corn?" He decided to leave that out of the study, thinking it wasn't going to affect the consumer attitude.
Okay. Well, meanwhile, through the store, look for organic meats if you can. Right.
Right. Yep.
Do that. Now, I'm not. I don't drink milk anymore. Haven't in years. In years. What about the little box of soy milk? What is that?
Well, most of the boxes of soy milk will say on them, made non-GMO soy or organic.
Or organic, okay.
And you're going to be wanting to look for the non-GMO project seal soon, because they'll probably now be migrating to that more robust claim. But still, you still want to check, because there may be some smaller soy brands that don't have that. A lot of the soy milks will have non-GMO soy in them. But I found one of those milk containers, I don't know if it was almond milk or something, that had canola oil in it. So you want to read the ingredients and don't just assume that it's safe.
I have sworn off pastas, so let's keep walking into the oil section. Let's pick up olive oil. What do you think?
Olive oil, very interesting. Olive oil is like the savior of those of us who go out to eat, and I travel 170 days a year, and so I eat out a lot. And I ask the waitress or the waiter, what oil do you cook in? And if they say vegetable oil, I know it's genetically engineered because it's soy, corn, cotton, or canola. And I say, do you have olive oil? And then I always ask, is it pure olive oil or is it cut? Because a lot of times they put canola oil in and sometimes soybean oil. Now, the sad news is that, this is an interesting statistic, the amount of olive oil consumed in the world exceeds the amount of olive oil produced. Now, what does that mean?
What does that mean? That means we're eating something that we shouldn't.
Yeah, they sometimes cut the olive oil with a non-olive oil, which is unfortunate. But if it comes out of Europe, it's probably not genetically engineered, because they don't use genetically modified soybean.
It's what the mob used to do during Prohibition, Jeffrey. They would get their booze and then they'd cut it with water and pour it back into other bottles and sell it, and they'd get more, but it'd be watered down. But that's what they did.
Yeah, and the thing is, unfortunately, some olive oil is like that. So I don't have any idea which brands are safe, but I do, you got to eat something.
Yeah.
And so olive oil
Just got to
is
be
where I
careful.
tend to go.
All right, what about the snacks? Can you get stuck eating some kind of GM snacks by mistake?
All right,
Potato chips
I'm
and
on
stuff like that.
non-GMOshoppingguide.com, and I'm going to look at snacks, okay?
All right.
So I've got baked goods, I've got candies, I've got condiment oils. So let's, snack food. Let's look at snacks. They're all by categories. Okay, so the may contain GMO ingredients column has things like Frito-Lay, Hostess products, Keebler, Kraft, Pepperidge Farm, Pringles, and Quaker Oats. The non-GMO side has things like Annie's, Barbara's, Burritos, Earthly Treats, Eco Planet, Eden, Field Day, Funky Monkey, etc. A whole long list: Nature's Path, Kettle Brands, Revolution Foods, Sunridge Farms, Woodstock Farms. These are ones that either they're organic or they're specifically non-GMO. Now, if you pick up a snack and you don't know because it's not on this list, but you look at some of the ingredients, you can go over to the section of the shopping guide that's the invisible ingredients. And the invisible ingredients lists products like citric acid or corn flour or dextrin or dextrose, which either are always derived by a GM or sometimes derived. So it's a bit of a gamble if you see one of these and you don't know whether it is or not. But that'll help you with the shopping guide look and see, well, if it's got lecithin, it's probably lecithin, it's probably soybean lecithin, and so it's genetically engineered unless it says non-GMO.
What about the cereal for your kids? With all the, the big companies out there.
Well, cereal, the big companies, they're generally on the may contain GM ingredients like General Mills, Kellogg, Post, and Quaker. And you'll find that the ones that you buy in natural food stores will be the non-GMO ones.
Unless they put it on their box, and they don't, do they? They
No.
don't put on non-GMO.
No, the General Mills, Kellogg, Post, and Quaker will generally not. So,
They
so
will
in,
after this show.
yeah, hopefully. See, the thing is, I think they're going to switch soon because especially parents are getting instructions from doctors now who are saying don't let your kids eat genetically modified corn flakes and things like that. So when Kellogg's realizes that doctors are telling parents to avoid the corn flakes, they're going to rush away. Like it's happened in Europe, within a single week, virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients when it became a liability.
What was the whole reason for going in this direction? Was it money? Was it to produce more crops? What was it?
Well, obviously, Monsanto and these other four biotech companies control the food supply
Of the world.
in the areas that in the crops that are already genetically engineered.
Right.
And one of the big reasons was Monsanto's patent on Roundup herbicide was expiring in the year 2000, so they created Roundup Ready crops. When you're a farmer and you buy Roundup Ready crops, you sign a contract saying you'll only buy Monsanto's version of that particular herbicide.
That's right.
So it was a de facto way of extending their control and dominance in herbicide sales.
Haven't farmers been sued if the wind blows a BT pesticide crop into their fields and they haven't signed a contract?
Oh, tons of them. In fact, as of 2007, Monsanto had filed 112 lawsuits against U.S. farmers, involving 372 farmers and 49 small agricultural businesses in 27 states. They won more than $21.5 million in judgments. They investigate about 500 farmers a year, and it's been hundreds of millions that they've received in settlements.
And most of these farmers can't afford even an attorney to defend themselves.
Even if they have never planted a GMO in their lives. And I've talked to farmers like Percy Schmeisser, who was simply contaminated by wind-blown canola seeds from passing trucks and nearby farms, and Monsanto sued him and won in the Canadian Supreme Court
Jeez.
because it was their intellectual property growing on his farm and being replanted, it violated the law.
Jeffrey, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls next hour with you. Very informative and pretty darn scaring, to tell you the truth. Jeffrey Smith, author of Genetic Roulette and also Seeds of Deception, all his websites linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The two big ones, non-GMOshoppingguide.com and responsibletechnology.org. We'll be back.